This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It's been just over 2 years since a white shooter took the lives of 8 people at several spas in Atlanta, Georgia, on March 16, 2021. Most of the victims of the mass shooting were Asian women. Since then, as per a new report by the group Stop AAPI Hate, anti-Asian attacks have continued. My guest is Cynthia Choi, co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate. Welcome to the program, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
What did that incident represent for you? It was horrifying. You know, it seems as though we keep getting numb to mass shootings, and yet they keep happening. And when it happens, particularly to a minority community, it's hard not to think of it as directly linked to white supremacy and white supremacist hate.
Well, of course, I remember the day vividly. It was, you know, days before our second anniversary, the formation of Stop API Hate. And this day is a day of infamy in the sense that it's a day of mourning, a reflection on the fact that our communities have been targeted, have experienced mass violence. And when we started Stop API Hate and we were running through possible scenarios, this was certainly one of them. But I do want to really make sure that it's understood that it is certainly a day of mourning and reflection about where we are as a country with regard to racial divisions and its roots in white supremacy, militarism, the sexual exploitation of Asian women. It's also a profound day of solidarity and action. It's a period in which we turn a horrific tragedy in our community in this understanding that we need to heal and to think about ways in which we need to address violence at its roots, which also includes facing the fact that our communities face multiple forms of violence and harm.
Right. When this shooting happened, there was already a massive uptick in anti-Asian hate. We saw isolated incidents that were part of a broader trend where, you know, elderly Asian women were just randomly attacked on the streets of cities, of supposedly liberal cities, even in ways that were so terrifying. You know, vulnerable members of our community being targeted out of the blue with no warning whatsoever, and devastatingly, you know, hurt or injured. So we start, and we, of course, this was also the time when we had a president who kept linking the COVID-19 pandemic to China, the Chinese virus, turning all Asians and people perceived as being Chinese as somehow being responsible for this global pandemic, right? And so that backdrop was there at the time. We have a different president now. The lockdowns have eased and supposedly everything's back to normal. But on the issue of anti-Asian hate, is it back to normal?
Well, Sonali, I think you provided such a perfect description of the context in which there has been a surge and uptick in anti-Asian hate incidents. And what I want to say right from the bat is that it continues unabated. And what we've been able to establish through Stop API Hate since we formed is that this is pervasive and systemic. We've received reports from all corners of the country, including and especially in areas where we have significant populations of Asian Americans and in some cases Pacific Islanders. And what's important to really note is that we have seen over 11,000 incidents. That's still a tip of the iceberg, but alarming because in prior years, our community did not have a centralized place to report their experiences with racism. And so we've been able to look at the data, who's been impacted, where this is happening, and the nature of the hate. And we want to just state very firmly that a majority of the incidents are not criminal in nature. That doesn't mean that it's not harmful and it has not had this effect of instilling terror and fear amongst our community, and that we need to take them seriously. If we see these numbers as more than just data, but as real people who are affected by this period of really our community being caught in the middle of US-China relations, and that being the backdrop where we have elected officials spewing anti-China, anti-Asian ideologies and viewpoints and scapegoating our communities, that's really led to what we believe attacks against our communities.
And I'm wondering whether there has been a difference that you've seen with, for example, taking the former president off of social media, having a new president in the White House. When there is somebody with power who is egging on and influencing large numbers of people, it has an effect. So I'm wondering if you see the difference that different leadership makes.
Absolutely. And we can even look back in our history that, of course, Donald Trump did not invent this political strategy of scapegoating the most vulnerable community members, immigrants, people of color. It is actually an American tradition. We in the Asian community specifically have been scapegoated for public health reasons, for economic and for national security reasons. And you see a through line throughout history. And we've seen elected officials, including the president of the United States, use his outsized platform to scapegoat, to deflect blame for his epic failure in responding to this pandemic that has touched so many lives. So it does make a difference. Words matter. And to have the current president actually acknowledge the harm, to condemn the attacks against our communities, and to commit to being the president for all people, and to using the federal agencies to ensure that no one should live in fear for their safety, is an important message, but also an important commitment that we are seeing being played out today.
And then we also have had some important strides made in popular culture. Just days before you and I are speaking, we saw some of the most prominent examples of positive Asian representation in pop culture with the Oscar wins for the film Everything Everywhere All at Once, a fantastic film, by the way. I want to just say personally, I watched it when it first came out in theaters last year. And in addition to the fact that it is just on its own an amazing film, for me, it felt quite moving to see such a broad base of Asian actors on screen in ways that were so complex and nuanced and human. And then, of course, to have that validated by the Academy, how important is that for you, Cynthia?
Well, just personally, this was a movie, and I'm talking about Everything and Everywhere All at Once, was a movie that my whole family attended, my three daughters. And it was really important for us to support this film because it was a story that resonated with our experiences, and to see so many talented creatives, not just the actors, really be on full display. And even though we recognize it, I think, in the community, but to have that validation. So it's a reflection of what a bittersweet time this is. To experience immense joy and pride. And I also want to mention, to have RRR and the Elephant Whispers, having the Asian diaspora also, be recognized, and women. So I think in this moment, I think it is really important to celebrate to experience joy, to see that our stories being told by us, for us, to have resonance, universality, it is really powerful. And we know the power of narrative. For so long, we have been caricatures, we have been one-dimensional, and to see so much of that changing and shifting, not just in the marketplace, but as a source of power, that our stories matter, is, again, a very important time for our community.
And I just want to say, as a South Asian, there's the representation with the Telugu film RRR, winning Oscar for Best Song was wonderful. However, members of the South Asian dance community were quite upset to find out that none of the dancers on screen that the Oscars hired, that the Academy hired to perform at the Oscars, were South Asian. Like, literally none. There were the two singers, but all the dancers were non-South Asian, including the two men who might have been brown-skinned, but were not South Asian. And so that was something very upsetting to South Asians who do have an active dance community here in Southern California, where the Academy films the Oscars. There is still progress to be made, right? I mean, Oscar So White is certainly not over.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, I read those reports too, and I was in shock that they missed an opportunity to highlight the Indian dance community, which is so vibrant, and especially in Southern California. There's no way that they would have had difficulty finding more representation.
And so this, you mentioned that narrative is really important. It's one way, of course, to counter, let's take it back to the issue of anti-Asian hate. It's one way to counter Asian hate. Can you broaden that conversation in terms of the solutions to white supremacist hate targeting specifically Asian communities? We need more representation on screen, better representation on screen. What else?
Well, I think the power of narrative is absolutely essential to our strategy in addressing anti-Asian hate and also hate directed at other communities, which we are also seeing on the rise.
And you see those as linked.
Absolutely. From the very beginning, our work has recognized that we can't address anti-Asian racism unless we address the root causes of racism that's being directed and impacting so many other communities. Anti-Black racism, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia. These are all interconnected, and it has to do with the fact that one of our jobs has been to educate the media and the general public that, of course, this isn't something new, that there has been throughout US history waves of anti-Asian racism, and it has been tied to this national narrative that, on the one hand, we can be portrayed as model minorities, as an example that structural racism doesn't exist. And on the other hand, we can be painted as a national security threat. To see that being played out, where Congresswoman Judy Chu is being questioned for her loyalty on the basis that she is Chinese, is just one example.
She is my representative here in Southern California, yeah.
Absolutely. And we're very concerned. We saw this come out over and over again in the run-up to the midterm elections. We're very concerned that this type of irresponsible rhetoric and the rationale for policies like banning land ownership of Chinese and other nationals in Texas. These are all remnants of what we saw during the height of the anti-Chinese, anti-Asian movement with the alien land laws. So we have to understand there is a historical through line, and we have to understand and connect the dots that they are connected. And we must condemn and speak out at every turn, which also includes standing up when other communities are being disproportionately targeted.
Right. Well, finally, give out a website where people can find out more and also look at the new report that was just released by Stop AAPI Hate.
Well, our name and our reports are really easy to find. It's stopapihate.org, where you can find resources, including our latest data, and also how you can get involved in the fight against racism.
We'll post a link to that. Thank you so much for joining us today, Cynthia. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Cynthia Choi, co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. By becoming a subscriber, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.